Hello, this is Gail Sotto for Think Magazine, chatting today with Brett King, whose best-selling book, Bank 2.0, focuses on the changing role of financial institutions in consumers' lives. Brett, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Gail.
So as I was reading through your background, I was immediately convinced about the importance of your concept of Bank 2.0. I mean, it seems very clear to me that our whole relationship to money, let alone banking, is undergoing a profound change right now. But how do you define Bank 2.0? And to your mind, what is this shift really all about?
That's a good question. I think Bank 2.0, when I originally came up with the idea for that as a title, there was a lot of confusion over whether this was like Web 2.0 in banking, but really what I was trying to say was this is version 2 of banking. This is how different it's going to be, is that you won't recognize banking after these changes are complete. So in terms of the scale of disruption, this is the most disruptive period in respect to the way banks interact with consumers that we will have ever seen in the entire history of banking. Now that might sound like a big statement to make, but if you think about banking, you know, the oldest bank in the world, which is currently in Siena Monte de Paschi, this bank is, you know, around 100 years old. And when you walk into the bank, essentially it looks like a branch that we would see, you know, in downtown, you know, Tennessee or Ohio or New York, you know, where there's a space for the tellers and customers walk up and they put cash in over the counter. Yeah, and so banking hasn't changed that much. In fact, even the word we use for check is based on an Assyrian, you know, word from the 3rd century BCE for a promissory note, tsak. You know, so even the terminology we use, the way we conduct banking, hasn't changed for thousands of years, really. So now what you have in place is that by 2015, the most interacted channel day-to-day for banking will be the mobile phone. Number 2 will be internet. Number 3 will be ATM. Number 4 will be the call center. And number 5 will be branches. So when you've got banks who are very geared towards serving customers through a branch with physical instruments, such as cash and check and plastic credit cards, and these things are no longer going to be used in the banking system, and people aren't visiting physical branches, what does that mean for banking? Well, it means a complete change in the way we interact.
Absolutely. Well, and it seems like this change has come about very quickly. I mean, as you said, banking was the same for centuries, and it's not even taken, it seems to me, a decade for people to have completely shifted their modes of payment. And if you had asked me 10 years ago, am I going to stop going to a bank branch, I'd say no.
But purely this area of payments and the way we transact, you know, if the internet gave us a shift in the way we interacted, the psychology of this can't be underestimated. But suddenly, at 11 o'clock at night, we could get online, we could start paying our bills, we could transfer money. This was the first time in our lives as consumers in the banking system that we had this element of control, because before that, the bank said, well, if you want to do those things, you have to come to a physical place, either the bank or a post office, and you have to do it between the hours of 9 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon, and otherwise, no, you can't do that. So suddenly, you know, we felt like we were in control of our money for the first time. So that behavioral shift, as you said, it started about 10 years ago, and now this is in, our expectations have now increased. You know, we can get our mobile phone and we can check in on an airline on our mobile phone. In fact, we can use our mobile phone as a boarding pass. So when you're going to a store and you're going to make a payment with a credit card, then, you know, the number one piece of information people want is, what's the balance on my credit card, or what's the balance on my debit account that I'm using? And today, for most banks, we still can't get that information on the mobile phone. But that's our expectation. Our expectation is that we should have that information contextually. And as the mobile phone device becomes more than just a phone, and turns into a credit card itself, as we can use this as a credit card or debit card to make payments through our phone at the point of sale, then increasingly we're detaching ourselves from the physicality of the banking system. and cash will cash usage will decline. Checks certainly are already in terminal decline everywhere in the world. The US is a little bit of a lag behind the rest of the world on that. They're still a bit attached to checks, but it won't take long before checks disappear here as well, certainly before the end of this decade.
Mm-hmm. It certainly seems that way. How good a job do you think financial institutions are doing of leading the charge?
Well, it's interesting because they're just starting to get it right now. I think the global mm-hmm. financial crisis, a lot of the banks, during the financial crisis, I heard a lot of banks saying, we can't wait till it gets back to normal. And now I think what there is the realization is that it's not going to get back to normal, that the level of disruption and transparency and the modality shift around the way customers are behaving, that level of disruption is only going to increase. So banks are in this challenging situation where their current internal metrics, the way they're organized, their procedures and processes are heavily built around a very branch-centric organization structure. So to make a shift, for example, to say, all right, well, we recognize the fact that most of our interactions in the future are going to occur electronically with our customers. How do we deal with that? It's tough because you've got the most important guy in the retail banking business is the head of branches because he's got the biggest budget. He's got the biggest P&L. So when you go to him and say, this is going to be extremely disruptive and we have to take money out of your bucket and put it over here into these electronic channels, this guy says, over my dead body, because the power that he's got in the organization is around the budget that he controls. So this is the problem in terms of why banks find it difficult to make this shift. But there are some great examples. ING Direct has done some fantastic stuff. Jibun Bank, which was the first mobile-only bank in the world, which is based out of Japan. You've got UBank, which was a startup from National Australia Bank, or NAB, as they're now known in Australia, who started this bank as a bit of an experiment in online savings products. And within 3 years, this new brand that they created online as a direct bank is now the eighth largest bank by deposits in its own right in Australia. Now, that's not because they're a great bank. This is because what they do is they make depositing online really, really easy. So by jumping in and capturing that behavioral change and enabling that behavioral change, NAB's been extremely successful with UBank. Now, it's not because NAB is a great bank. It's because they enabled the behavioral change. So the banks who are doing well with this are figuring out that if I provide a platform for this changing behavior for customers, then that's a way I can make a transition. But the difficult thing is that you have to live in two worlds. You have to still serve the traditional bank. The traditional customers are still using the traditional instruments and help migrate them to this new world. So you've got to carry two cost structures. So this is why we see actually new startups at the moment who are coming into this space. And they may be able to lead the charge more effectively because they don't have those organizational constraints of what's happened in the past. So we see Bank Simple, we see Google and Apple playing with NFC payments. I think it's going to be a lot of third parties coming into what we would have traditionally called the banking space and operating as a front end to banks. And banks will tend to, if they can't make that change, then they'll tend to become wholesale providers. So they'll either provide the banking as a platform or they'll be providing the products that these third parties will be reselling. I think that's probably where things will go over the next 15 to 20 years.
Where will credit unions fit, or where can credit unions try to fit in terms of all of this changing environment?
It's actually interesting because, you would think that because of the challenges with budget associated with rolling out mobile and all of these things, that credit unions might be at a disadvantage here over the bigger banks. But there are elements where credit unions, co-ops, smaller community banks and so forth have an advantage, and that is that they're built on the foundation of the fact that they're there to serve members or they're there to serve the community. And if you look at what is one of the biggest drivers today, it is the reemergence of the importance of community through social media. So co-ops, they've got an opportunity here to take their community and think about, well, look, we're really, really good at community. How do we take our knowledge of serving community and adapt that to the virtual space through social media? Because they can get really high advocacy that brands like a Citi or a Bank of America or a Wells Fargo would be extremely envious of. Because of that community nature. So they've got to really leverage off that, I think. But there will be the challenge of how do they move forward with all of these innovations technically. And I think this is where another piece of technology at the moment, which is we refer to as the cloud, is an opportunity here. Because I don't think these co-ops need to necessarily go out and do all the things the big banks are doing. I think they need to look at common platforms that will be emerging where they can use those rather than having to build all their own. And I think also looking at collaboration opportunities between the community of co-ops themselves. So, get a number of these different credit unions and co-ops together. And, as a group, if they can then transform platform or help go towards this, I think that's effective. So we're seeing a few things in that area, like the Casasa initiative that Bankview started, which I think has about 70 smaller banks involved in it at the moment. So they have some sort of common platform behind that. But this is sort of vendor-led. I'd be interested to see something more in industry-led where there's some of this innovation in platform and sort of a cooperation model comes out of it. But I think there are opportunities here. And those opportunities are that a bank that was once limited to a geographical region, if they then have a good technology platform, there's no reason that they have to be anymore.
Well, and that's exciting.
It is.
Well, we are certainly looking forward to hearing more from you at Think 11 in May. And again, thank you so much for talking with us this morning. This is all fascinating, and as I said, I can't wait to hear more.
It's a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you and meeting lots of interesting people.